Welcome, everybody. We will call this December 12th meeting of PFAC to order. And the first order of business is to approve the minutes of the October 10th, 2013 PFAC meeting. Before I ask for comments, I have a comment. Suzanne, would you please fill us in? What happened to the Santa Ana Heights project? Did it get out?
Well, we are expected to price on Tuesday. And Mr. Chair and PFAC members, I'm very pleased to report that we found out earlier this week that we would receive an A-minus rating from Standard & Poor's. We're very pleased with that because all along we were expected to believe that we would receive a triple B or triple B plus based on other tax allocation bond refundings occurring in the state. There still have only been, you know, maybe like a dozen completed at this point. So as I mentioned, we will price next week and intend to close the first week of January.
Okay, good, good. Any comments on the October 10th minutes?
Move adoption.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next order of business is we have a calendar of meetings, which we rarely adhere to, but nevertheless, we do this every year. I believe everybody's received a schedule of proposed PFAC meetings.
We put them in pencil.
Yeah, put them in pencil. That's all right. But if any comments?
Yes. Do we need to meet on January 9th?
Yes.
We do.
Mr. Chair and PFAC committee members, we do have a couple of items that we intend to bring forward. One is another CFD refunding, and I'm not sure if that's it, but we do have a couple of items, so I'm afraid we do.
This brings up an issue. I'm not going to be here. I'll be out of the country. But the do we usually pick a new chairman on the first meeting in January? Is that what we do?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay.
Could we postpone that to the second meeting of the year?
It's fine with me. Whatever. There's no reason we can't. Is there?
There's no reason that we can't, so okay. We'll make a note of that.
All right. So, at any rate, the item in front of us is the approval of the PFAC meeting schedule for 2014. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item on the agenda.
Sorry. I'm just wondering if the bylaws require it to be at the first meeting, if we would want to put it on the first meeting and continue it just to make sure. I'm not sure if the bylaws do require it. Sometimes they require a chair and a vice chair to be elected at the first meeting. So if it's on the agenda, it then maybe could be continued to the next meeting. Thank you.
Hi, this is Angie Duthrie, County Council's office. Let me just take a quick look at the bylaws and I'll report in a bit.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the issuance of the taxable pension obligation bonds to prepay the county's 2014 and 2015 pension obligation. Ms. Lester, will you fill us in, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and PFAC committee members. At this time, I'd like to invite Lewis McClure of Public Finance, CEO Public Finance, to come up to the podium and present this item.
Thank you, Suzanne. As mentioned, item four is to approve the issuance of the 2014 short-term pension obligation bonds, or POBs, in an amount not to exceed $347 million. PFAC and the board did approve the POBs in concept on October 11th and 16th, respectively. And we really expect to remain true to the plan we put forth in the approval in concept, most notably the direct purchase by the treasurer, 5 fixed rate maturities, and a final repayment by June 30 of 2015. As expected and in years past, some departments with sufficient cash on hand will not be included in the financing. They'll prepay on their own and get the full benefit of the full discount without interest or issuance costs. With those departments factored in, the principal is actually more likely to going to be about $325 million as opposed to $347. The treasurer and CEO's office have agreed to a pricing scale largely based on the results of last year's public sale, which basically use a spread to the six-month or year treasury, depending on the maturity, for each of the five maturities. Our estimated savings based on those rates and a slight factor for any increase in the benchmarks is approximately $21 million after issuance and interest costs. And the treasurer is requiring a minimum rating of A+ by S&P. And to that end, the county staff is presenting the POB financing to Standard & Poor's tomorrow and will request a rating by the issuance date. As a point of reference, last year, the POBs did receive an A+ rating from S&P, so we're not too concerned about that. Subject to approval by PFAC and the board and the A+ rating, we expect to issue these bonds before January 15th, which is when the prepayment to OSERS is due. And if approved today, we will go before the board this coming Tuesday, the 17th. The documents in your package include the resolution to be adopted by the Board of Supervisors, the bond purchase agreement, the fourth supplemental trust agreement, and the pension obligation debenture. I'm available for questions.
Do I understand, Ms. Friedenrich, that you are going to, or your department is going to buy this?
Yes, we've been working with the CEO of Public Finance Office. As county treasurer, I hold not just county funds, but I also am a fiduciary for all the school districts here in the county. In addition, we have some voluntary pool participants. So we did a full credit review on the county. We went through our normal credit process to determine if this would meet the expectations for an investment in our portfolio, in our pooled funds. It did. If we put any into our shorter money market funds, we do require an A plus rating for putting it into that short money market fund, which is rated by S&P. We also have a longer fund, which the majority of the funds would, which some of the funds would go into. And under our investment policy, the County of Orange does not have to have a rating, but again, because of our short-term money market fund, we are requiring an A-plus rating on that, and certainly we'll be working very closely in my role as treasurer to provide any answers to S&P on questions they would have on our investment portfolio.
And did I understand that that rating is due when?
We're going to present to S&P tomorrow, and then we'll need it by closing. We're hoping late December.
Okay. It takes them 2 weeks or so to usually?
Generally, I think.
And what happens if we don't get that rating? Does that mean you won't buy a portion of it, or?
We have a limit on the percentage that we can accept for any issuer. Our total portfolio is $6 billion. And the limit for the County of Orange is a 10% limit. The limit for all other issuers is a 5% limit. In our county funds and voluntary pool participants, we have about half of that, which is about $3 billion. So the $325 would be slightly over that. We were planning on purchasing it just in our county and our voluntary pool participants fund. But again, we've done a complete credit review on it. We believe it is an investment that we would purchase if it was in the open market. We have a small liquidity premium that we have added because of the, it will take a significant portion of our funds. So I believe we would have options to work with CEO Public Finance if a rating were to be slightly different on that. So certainly we would work closely with them for that. And I don't expect it would be an issue, but I don't have that for sure finalized.
So, in other words, you don't know how it's going to come out.
Right. We would expect, again, just looking at the finances, that we would expect there's no major changes. In fact, there are significant progress the county has made. It no longer has a lawsuit that was last year with the state. The county, again, property taxes are going up. We are looking at an improving economy. We just received, we have higher property tax collected this year than the same time last year. So I don't expect that, but I do believe we would be able to work out an option with that to be able to purchase it because it is a credit that we think would be appropriate for all of the pooled funds that we invest.
So, okay. All right. I'm sorry, Ms. Hughes, go ahead.
With that subject, I hope I didn't hear what I heard was, well, we can go back to the drawing board if it's not an A+.
That's not how I understand
no,
it.
No, like we will. We would be able to, as I say, our portfolio is $6 billion. We have our plan, and I actually just emailed my staff to see if he would be available to come over, but we certainly would have the ability to purchase up to $600 million of county debt. We do not currently own any county debt, so we have the ability to purchase $600 million of county debt within our investment policy requirements. And currently, our plan was to put it in one of the pools. We have the option because, again, we've done a full credit review that we could expand it to the other pool. So I don't expect that that would have any impact on the financing.
That wasn't my question.
Oh.
The document, the bond purchase agreement, mm-hmm. That we're approving.
Oh, I see.
We're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Says it has to have a rating of 8. It's at page 7. Of the agreement. It doesn't say are in the alternative or what happens if we don't. It says we must have it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't get an A+, then what happens? It comes back to us, right?
Well, I think the argument is that these documents are in substantially final form, and I guess it would have to be decided at that time how substantial that change is and if the documents could go forward without coming back, or if, you know, I mean, I would imagine,
okay.
You know, if the rating was one away, it would be an analysis we'd have to make at the time.
And if I may interrupt, Mr. Chairman and committee members, we have David Field from Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe, who I would like to ask to come up to the podium to address that issue, if that would be a substantial change that would require us to come back for an additional approval, or if that would be considered not a material change, that we could go ahead and make that amendment to the documents.
Well, Mr. Chairman, before he speaks, I had another concern. Was that we've been asked to approve the documents, and I know we had approved this in concept, but these are the documents that we were given to study. And the opinion of bond counsel is to come. And the opinion of county council is to come. And so we are going to vote on this without the opinions of our councils. And we're about now to hear what happens if somebody declares that the document isn't what the document says. So with that.
Good afternoon. My name is Don Field. I'm with Orrick, Harrington, Sutcliffe, bond counsel to the county on the pension obligation bonds. The rating requirement in the bond purchase agreement is there is a condition of the treasurer for the purchase by the treasury pool. The documents you're approving on behalf of the county as the issuer of the bond. So the change in the rating would be a change that the county treasurer would approve, and that would be favorable to the county. So I don't think that would be a substantial change that would require to come back to the board for additional approvals if that were to change.
Well, I guess the question I have, and Mrs. Hughes' question, why did you write it that way?
I think the expectation is that the rating would be obtained, so I don't think anyone expected that there would be a difficulty in getting the rating affirmed from last year.
It wasn't the question. Council, the question was, why didn't you write it that way?
I think the presumption from the treasurer's office is that that's the requirement that they want, and if they decide, if the rating comes back differently, that they would look at it again.
Aren't we against the January 15th deadline?
Pardon me?
Aren't we against the January 15th deadline on this funding?
Yes, according to this.
Right.
I'm sorry.
That's correct. We must make the prepayment to OSERS by January 15th in order to receive the discount. And since we've been doing this a number of years now, we don't have any reason to believe that we wouldn't receive an A-plus rating. In fact, each year in the past few years, in the last 3 years, our sources of funds, the economy, the county's position has improved. So we do feel confident in the ability to receive an A-plus rating from S&P.
But I think what Mrs. Hughes is getting at is that what if, the way you wrote it, it's crystal clear. And what if that rating doesn't materialize? Do we have to, does it have to come back to PFAC and to the Board of Supervisors, or what?
Again, I don't think that would be a substantial change from the approval. It, the rating requirement is a condition of the purchaser. It's not a, a requirement from the county.
But it would mean that we'd have to go through the underwriter and sell it somewhere else.
If the treasurer wasn't able to purchase all of it, then there would have to be a change in the approvals.
Okay. So the conundrum here is that if the rating is a notch lower, the treasurer's office may or may not buy it. And if they don't buy it, then we have to find somebody else in the market to buy it.
Correct.
Now that brings me to, why don't we have an opinion of counsel?
The opinions of counsel are typically not included. They're form opinions, so we would be delivering our standard form opinion on a pension bond. So the form documents typically have a placeholder for them, but it's not something that is needed for the approval of the agreements that the county has entered into.
Why not? Then why do it? What are we paying for?
The opinions will be presented at the closing.
If I may say, this is Angie Duffrey again from the County Council's office. We typically don't deliver those opinions to right to the eve of the closing. There's certain representations that we make that we cannot really make before they're delivered. So it's very typical in terms of the financing not to have those opinions ready to a day or two before the closing. And oftentimes they're not included in the packet.
How about if we have proposed opinions of counsel?
Well, again, there are standard form of opinions. It's the form of opinion we've used for the last, well, every time we've issued a pension obligation bond, and the what is represented is negotiated oftentimes, or the standard was negotiated some time ago with bond counsel and the underwriters. So it's they don't change, and there's certain reps we cannot make because we're not experts in security law. So they're kind of boilerplate reps that we make.
Well, may I make this suggestion, as we did earlier, and clearly the minutes of PFAC should state that PFAC is totally relying on the Public Finance Department for the accuracy of these documents and the truthfulness of these documents, and we're not in a position to judge the documents in per se. So that's in the meeting, and we've done that in the past because we don't have the final documents. And not only that, we don't have the resources to analyze it anyway.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman and PFAC committee members, that is understood.
Okay. All right. Does that satisfy you, Ms. Hughes?
No, I think it's a potted plant argument. If you're telling me that I spent the time that I did to go through these documents and they don't mean anything, because if it doesn't quite work out that way, listen, we'll just determine it's not material. We'll go ahead and do what we're going to do because we can cozy up, because it's one county department to the other. I'm not comfortable with that. I also am not comfortable with the amount of fees and cost. And you have a fine firm, sir. I'm not saying anything against your firm. And I'm a lawyer, and I charge those fees myself. Is that we pay for opinions of bond counsel so that we would have an opinion, and county counsel, in order to be able to come up with appropriate questions and looking at it, and you tell me I can't even get the standard form one because we just don't do that, then why have it? So it might as well be a potted plant.
Yeah, this financing is a little bit different than what you would normally see in your, when you do a public sale. The opinion is typically not even part of the bond purchase agreement. It's usually included in the disclosure document to investors.
Mm-hmm.
So since there's no disclosure document because the treasurer is purchasing the pension obligation bonds, it's going to be an append or an exhibit to the bond purchase contract. It's just that that standard form just hasn't been inserted yet, but it's going to be our standard form that's been delivered in your connection with your program year after year.
Well, thank you.
This goes back to my original question about the January 15th deadline. We're assuming the treasurer buys it all. It's not a problem. But if for some reason we get a rating and she can't buy those, then how are we going to sell these to the public? Because we purposely said in here that we don't have certain documents that you would normally have in a public sale.
Correct. And you can maybe answer that further, but I think the decision's been made that since it's everyone is relying on the fact that everyone expects the rating to come in, it was decided that multiple sets of documents wouldn't be produced to deal with contingencies to save cost of the additional legal work.
Well, but then, getting back to the potted plant argument, but then, do I understand, Sherry, that you're going to buy this no matter what?
Thank you, Chair. I did receive confirmation from staff. We are purchasing it 100% for our extended fund. Obviously, if the county were to get a B rating or something, that would have to factor into our purchase of it. I would take it back to our credit investment committee if there is a difference than an A-plus rating. We have fully reviewed the credit. We've looked at the cash flows. We've looked at the dollars coming in. At this time, we believe the county is a good credit, and we would expect to purchase it. And we did have a requirement of A-plus if we were to buy some of it into our short money market fund. But it does appear we are purchasing it all into our extended fund, and there is not a rating requirement. But certainly, we would always reserve the right to look at if there was a significant change to a much lower rating. That would be a risk that certainly the county would take in this purchase. As you've heard from them, they have their expectations. You know, as a separate fiduciary, we really look at those types of things also. And I think originally we were purchasing some of it into our money market, which would require the A-plus. We are in the process of changing some of our liquidity requirements, and so that is where my staff has confirmed to me that we will be purchasing it into our 100% into our extended fund, which does not have those.
Regardless of the rating?
Not regardless of the rating. As I said, if there were to be a significant change from that A-plus, a B, or a non-investment grade, we would have to look at those that information coming out. But based on what we've looked at with our credit review, I would certainly not expect any of that to be there. And we do have a credit investment committee that this would go before. I'm one of those three members on that. But if they were to get the next notch down, which would be an A rating, I wouldn't expect that would be something that would have a significant impact on that decision, because we also do our own credit analysis. We do not rely 100% on ratings. As many of you may know, there were a lot of instruments that were highly rated that turned out to be not rated very well. So when I came, we now do a separate complete review of those. And at this time, we certainly have done that review on the county. And we believe that the dollars, the rate that we have compensates us for that risk we are taking with the credit of the county.
Well, I think this conversation is I mean, we work on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, and I think that we're here to advise and not necessarily consent. But I think that this conversation should be passed on to the supervisors in the minutes that there was a discussion about the documents were prepared as if this was a done deal with respect to ratings, and it's not clear what would happen if the ratings are less than we anticipated.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have another issue.
Okay. Proceed.
I don't want to hear. We were just confirming before the meeting that I was on this board when it was initially put together 20 years ago. I know I don't look that old, but I am. I want to preface my remarks. I have the highest regards. I'm a supporter of our chair, or of our treasurer, and this has no reflection on you or the office of the chair per se. The reason PFAC was put, my knowledge, and as a initial member, was because of what had happened with the treasurer and the county historically, and the bankruptcy, and all those stories. And the treasurer did not sit, if I recall, on the committee. Now, here's what's making me uncomfortable. Having come from that historical background that we were the oversight the SEC wanted to see so that the treasurer would be have oversight with vis-a-vis the Board of Supervisors, you've now just described that we got this done deal that was already set up, and we got the rating in there, and we're sure it's going to happen because S&P is going to give us an A+, and if they're not, well, it's not a material change. It'll go back, and the treasurer can do this. And by the way, the treasurer is voting on it.
I will be abstaining. I have not. I have a conflict purchasing it, and so we've already determined that I will be abstaining. So I do apologize. I should have probably indicated that up front.
Right.
So
I
do apologize.
Not. And I was uncomfortable with the fact that it was my understanding you would be voting. Nothing. I still adore you. Nothing personal.
Yes, I do. But
I do think there's a conflict. And I do think the appearance of impropriety or the appearance of a lack of, there's somewhat of a conflict created here. I'm not proud of what was said here.
If I may address an issue, again, Angie Duffery, County Council office, what we did in this particular transaction is that our office provided the treasurer separate counsel. So she was assigned separate counsel, John Abbott, to advise that particular office on any questions she may have relating to the transaction, and I advised the Public Finance Department. So there was an arm's length transaction from that perspective. Mr. Abbott and I had an ethical wall and didn't share privileged information from that perspective. So if it provides you comfort to know that we did advise, our office separately advised both departments.
But isn't John Abbott a Orange County employee?
Yes, he's from my office, but right. He advised the treasurer and answered questions because I actually represent both departments.
Well, that's like the same law firm representing both sides. Right.
And there's Attorney General opinions that says that's permissible.
Of course
in a county council's. In a county council department, you can have attorneys from the same office, as we do for AMB, who there's attorneys in our office who represent the Assessment Appeal Board and also represent the assessor's offices, and there's an ethical wall. And likewise, in this particular transaction, we provided the same type of service here.
It's still the appearance. And so now, PFAC wasn't advised that because of the conflict that we brought up, nobody said to us, we brought this issue up. Then we get told, well, we have two counsel with a conflict because Mrs. Hughes, you're right, there's something wrong here in the conflict and the story that we're doing. Yes, we are. You're asking for us to approve a deal that's already been approved by the two lawyers from the same office have gotten together, but we got an ethical wall here. That just means that they don't talk to each other. And we didn't know about it. It wasn't part of what our information was. And it got asked because I asked for bond counsel's letter and county counsel's letter, of which we don't have. And I wasn't told, we weren't told, that the treasurer would not be voting on this for those very reasons. And this is why PFAC was put on to begin with.
Well, I think we've aired.
If I might, Chair.
I think we've aired these issues. I think that, and that's
yes,
worth
we
something.
Have.
I think the important thing is that this gets properly recorded and passed on to the supervisors. And my experience in financings, not just in the county, but in my personal historical financing, that these financings are always dynamic going up until the closing date. And there are certain things that change. They have to change, and they change automatically. And so it doesn't bother me that we don't have the council's opinion on this at this particular point. It would bother me a great deal if we got a copy of it at the closing and we didn't like it. That would be very unnerving. But I understand the format and the procedure and how these things change. So I think the important thing is here, I think we brought up some key points. Ms. Hughes's points are well taken. I think our county treasurer agrees. I don't think there's any disagreement here.
Yes, and I take responsibility. I should have notified completely before the discussion started that because of a conflict, I would be here just providing information, and I would not be voting, and I would be abstaining. And I do apologize to the rest of the members. I should have had that into the record immediately so that each of you would have known that in bringing up the questions, and I do apologize.
And I think that we also have to not forget what we have here. We have a very rational plan that will save the county $21 million by this prepayment. Whether that's prudent for the pension fund is another thing, but nevertheless, it is a rational transaction, and I think it's important that we proceed on it. I don't disagree with Mrs. Hughes's criticisms here at all, but I understand the process, and I understand how these things are very dynamic. So, Mr. Moore, do you have some comments?
I did have a question. Based on the Federal Reserve, next few days, next week, maybe cutting back on its purchases, what effect will that have on their rate? What are you thinking?
And the interest rates.
Interest rates. I think the finance person is probably, and nobody knows if they're going to do it or how much they're going to do it.
Good afternoon. My name is Bobby Chung. I'm with KNN Public Finance, the financial advisor for this transaction. And let me just make clear, the question is, what will happen if the Federal Reserve will start tapering or buying less of the bonds in the open market as they have done? You know, the last time that this possibility came up in the market, the Treasury rates and interest rates rose mostly on the intermediate to the long end and stayed relatively unmoved on the short end. And so I would anticipate that would occur again. I don't know that for certain. But again, we are pricing this transaction off of the 6-month and the 1-year Treasury, which is the very short end of the yield curve.
We've quoted $21 million in savings. This would have a direct effect on that. Do you have any idea as far as the cost on the financing if it goes up?
What would the spread? Let me re-ask the question. How would the spreads vary if the 6-month went up 25 basis points? What would the spreads be on this? How would that affect the spreads?
Well, okay. This transaction will be priced as a spread to those benchmark treasuries. So
how many tranches are there?
There are five
tranches. Okay. From the what? From the 30-day to the 6-month, or what are the?
Oh, actually, the first tranche will be priced off of the 6-month treasury, yeah. And all subsequent tranches will be priced off of the 1-year treasury.
Okay.
So if the 6-month treasury or the 1-year treasury would increase 2 basis points, the borrowing cost would correspondingly increase 1 or 2 basis points.
What do you anticipate the spread over the treasuries to be today?
That spread to the treasuries has already been negotiated between public finance and the treasurer's office.
And they are?
Let's see. The 6-month treasury, let's see. The July 15th, 2014 maturity will have a 58 basis point spread. The October 15th, 2014 maturity will have a 58 basis point spread. The January 15th, 2015 maturity will have a 65 basis point spread. The April 15th, 2015 maturity will have a 70 basis point spread, and the June 30, 2015 maturity will have a 73 basis point spread. And please correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct, and that spread also includes a 10 basis point liquidity premium that was negotiated with the treasurer tax collector, and the way we came about that. Once a liquidity premium was proposed by the treasurer, our financial advisor queried a few banks to see if that was reasonable and if that would be similar to what they would propose as
well. What do you mean a liquidity premium?
I can probably answer that as the treasurer. We are not intending to resell this. We are planning on holding it to maturity. There's no other issues of the county in the market. And so when you have something that's not, it's thinly traded, it's not going to get the best rates. It's not like a U.S. Treasury where you can buy and sell those and they have a very, the bid and the ask is very small. This would have a greater, so we felt it was important for our pool participants to have a liquidity, a premium with that. And I believe the rates were comparable to those last year and with other issues that have been out there. And the last thing, if the county does get, if they don't get an A+, we would go back to CEO and talk about that pricing again. What would be those basis points difference? And that would probably be the factor that would influence what that rate we would earn on it. Thank you.
Okay. By the way, just to bring us up to date, what is the 6 month now?
The 6 month treasury is, I believe, 10 basis points as of this morning.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Ms. Grimes, do you have any comments?
No.
Mr. Kim, do you have a comment?
No.
Okay. Any other comments anybody like to throw in this? Okay. I would like to have a motion for approval of these taxable pension obligation bonds. Do we have a motion for approval?
I'll make the motion.
Do we have a second? I'll second. Do we, who's in favor? I think we should go down the road here. You're abstaining?
Abstaining.
That's right. Mr. Moore?
I'll vote in favor.
Yes. No. Ms. Hughes? No. I vote in favor. Ms. Grimes?
In favor.
And Mr. Kim?
In favor.
Okay. We have 4-1. Am I right about that? Am I count right? Yes.
Technically, I can't vote because I'm an ex officio member, so.
That's right.
That's right. Pardon me. I forgot that. All right. Okay. So we have 3-1. Okay. Okay. Just to wrap this up, I'd like to ask Ms. Hughes to comment on this, because I think what, if I'm reading what I've heard here, you're a little concerned with the protocol and the format and the documentation, the way these things are presented. What would you like differently?
I hearken back to what happened 20 years ago.
You don't think that the Treasury Department should buy?
Oh, no. That's not the issue. It's the appearance. You get the recording here. Well, we knew we're going to buy this, we're going to do this, and if it doesn't quite fit in here, we can work that out. Don't worry, it's a material change. You don't need these opinions because they're format anyway that we're doing it. That's the appearance that we just gave the public. And we were put on this board to be an oversight committee. We are to oversight to make sure that the public's questions or concerns are vetted in the light of day. Now, I have the highest regard for our county employees. I have the highest regard for our treasurer. But I don't like the process that just happened. And I'm not going to go back over it. And it doesn't smell right. In court, we have, on those conflict cases, there's a smell test. It's in the case law. Doesn't smell right. Doesn't look right. Doesn't sound right. And you give us the authority to do the oversight. We spend hours going through this, and then you tell us, well, it doesn't really matter. Well, we're back to potted plant. Okay, what are we here for? And if we're not here to say that this board is here to do a job and we're going to live up to that requirement, then let's all go home and save yourself the whole $200 you give us every time we come. By the way, I'm grateful for the $200. I didn't mean to be sarcastic about that. But I went to run for treasurer, her job. I was asked by someone to run because I'm a CPA, and they thought I could do that. And I went around, and everybody said, this was before Morlock, said, well, you know, Mr. Citron gets these wonderful returns. He's a Democrat. I'm a Republican. But, you know, he's just making the county so much money that nobody is going to question him. Nobody. And that's what I was told. We all know what happened. So we're here to make sure that history doesn't repeat itself because of something falling through the cracks. And I intend to, as long as I'm on this board, to take this seriously. And I raised the same amount of heck the last time I was here, and they took a vote to try and change the structure so that I couldn't be back on the board at the time, which said that if you donated over $100 to any politician, you couldn't be on the board, which one of us hasn't donated $100? It's our obligation. So if you don't like what I'm saying, then get me off the board. But I am here to ask those hard questions, and I'm not afraid to say we should do something differently. You give me a set of documents, you make sure they're complete. Yeah. You want to change the rules of the game, you put in there, we can change the rules of the game. You have conflict counsel on this deal? You tell me you have conflict counsel on this deal. You tell me you're going to abstain because you have an obvious conflict, then you tell us up front. And then Mrs. Hughes will be quiet. But until then, that's my job.
Okay, duly noted.
Mr. Chair and yes. Members of PVAC, if I might add, Ms. Hughes, your points are well taken, and the county staff are always looking to improve our processes. We want it to be the most transparent, accurate process possible. So, you know, we will review the notes of this meeting and see how we can improve in the future.
No, you will.
Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda. We've been asked to approve the issuance of the South Orange County Public Financing Authority Tax Revenue Bonds Series A and B, better known as Newport Heights. Is that what it's known, Suzanne? That's what this is called.
Ladera.
Ladera. Pardon me. Yeah, Ladera. Would you proceed, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of PFAC. At this time, I would like to ask Lori Sekar of CEO Public Finance to come to the podium to present this item.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of PFAC. The item before you is to approve the authors, the to approve it in to f- start over. We are asking the committee to approve the issuance of the South Orange County Public Finance Authority bonds. These special tax revenue bonds will refund the CFD 2002 and CFD 2003 special tax bonds. These had been to your committee and to the board prior. We've talked lengthily about these. By way of history, the board approved the issuance of the special tax bonds for the Ladera Ranch CFD 2002-1. In the approximate amount of $68.3 million and CFD 2003-1 in the amount of $57.2 million approximately. On April 29th, 2003 and March 16, 2004, respectively. The bonds were issued to pay the cost of forming the CFDs and to finance certain public projects and facilities for the benefit of residents in those districts. The public projects and facilities financed and their status are described in a separate handout that was emailed to you yesterday, I believe, evening. And if you do not have them, I do have extra copies here.
We have them.
Okay.
I do. Okay.
Great. CFD 2002 and CFD 2003 are located adjacent to each other in the unincorporated area of Orange County near Southeast Mission Viejo. Both CFDs are fully built out, meaning they're fully developed, sold, and the escrows are closed. The CFD 2002-1 consists of 1,857 residential units or parcels. 29 of those parcels are non-residential, or 29 additional parcels are non-residential, and approximately 13 acres of undeveloped property. CFD 2003-1 consists of 1,259 residential units, parcels, and one parcel of non-residential property, which is a daycare center. The assessed value to lien ratio on CFD 2002-1, based on the assessed values as of January 1st, 2013, the aggregate principal amount of the local obligation original bonds, and including the total direct and overlapping debt based on liens as of September 2nd, 2013, was over 10 to 1. which is considered favorable for marketing of land secure transactions of this nature. The assessed value to lien ratio for 2003-1, based on the same data, was over 8-1. The favorable market conditions present opportunity to refund these bonds and reduce the special taxes for the property taxpayers in these districts. By combining the refunding of 2002-1 and 2003-1, through the authority, economies of scale are achieved through lower borrowing costs. The cost of issuance estimated currently is approximately $370,000. If we were to refund the CFD bonds separately, our cost of issuance, it could be approximately $530,000. So we're, in essence, saving about $160,000 doing this combined transaction. The proposed authority refunding bonds is estimated to result in a net present value savings of approximately 9 million, excuse me, yeah, right, 9% or 5 million for each of the CFDs. These savings translate to
total of 10? Did I hear that right?
Yes, that's correct.
It's a total of 5 or a total of 10?
5 each.
Okay.
These savings translate to an estimated average annual per parcel savings of about $495 for CFD 2002-1 and $431 for CFD 2003-1. That's the taxpayer's portion. The proposed structure of the authority refunding bonds consists of public-private hybrid bond sale of up to $120 million. The publicly offered senior lien bonds, Series A, would be sold on parity, meaning with equal rights and pledged equal rights of pledged revenues. With the privately placed junior lien bonds, Series B, this hybrid public-private sale offers savings of approximately 95 to 100 basis points over a sole public sale. Of the aggregate principal amount of $120 million, the junior lien bonds in the amount of $40 million would be privately purchased based on a commitment we received from WAB, WAB Investments, a wholly owned subsidiary of Western Alliance Bank, at an interest rate not to exceed 5%, and I understand that interest rate currently is at about 4.02%. The proceeds from the senior lien bonds and junior lien bonds will purchase the two local obligations, that is the bonds from the 2002 and 3 CFDs. The proposed refunding authority bonds will be secured by debt service payments paid with respect to the local obligations, the payment of which will be secured by special taxes levied on the taxable property within the districts. Also, both CFDs are participants in the county's cheater plan. Standard & Poor's assigned a rating of triple B plus to the proposed senior lien bonds portion. The junior lien bonds do not require a rating. Near the time of the price, and the county will decide if we purchase insurance or not, depending on market conditions and other relevant data at the time. We have attached quite a slew of documents for you, about 11 documents. The resolutions are attached solely for your review, and they are for the board will be looking at adopting those should you approve these today. In summary, the county requests your committee's approval of the recommended action to issue the South Orange County Public Financing Authority special tax refunding bonds, Series A, senior lien bonds, and Series B, junior lien bonds, in an aggregate amount not to exceed $120 million. This concludes my presentation, and I am available, and we have representatives from our consultants available to answer questions.
Thank you. I'll start, if I may. As I understand it from what you just said, and your documents say that all of this infrastructure has been built out except for the La Pata extension and the firehouse. Am I right about that?
That's correct.
So all this work has been done and paid for, and in some bank account, a trust account somewhere, there's $3.9 million plus $3.8 million there sitting there somewhere, right? I mean, that's the unused portion of the bonds that have been sold.
That's correct.
Okay. And who administers that? What's the mechanism for that?
Mr. Chairman and PFAC committee members, those monies are in the county treasury, and the CEO Public Finance Division of the CEO is the administrator, and we have an accounting staff that reconciles the accounts to the county's financial records each month.
Okay, so we're holding that cash.
Correct.
Is that correct? All right. I'm not quite sure why you're doing a senior substructure here. You didn't quite explain why you're doing that. Why are you doing an A and a B structure?
Well, there we did determine that there, after doing numerous, our underwriter did numerous calculations and came up with a savings, the differential between a sole public sale and a hybrid private sale, I believe was 78 basis points. Is that correct?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and PFAC board. Katie Koster with Piper Jaffray, and I'm the underwriter on the transaction. We investigated very early on a number of different structures for this transaction. As you know, there are six CFDs within the Ladera Ranch project, three of which have been refunded prior to today, three of which we were looking at separately as standalone refundings and in different combinations to increase the economics. If we were to refund any one of those three, and we're talking about 2002-1, 2003-1, which are before you today, and 2004-1, which we'll be addressing in January, if you were to do any one of them on a standalone basis, the credit characteristics of each would lend itself to a lower rating than by aggregating the two, 02-1 and 03-1 together, we're adding diversity, we're adding size, and by creating a senior subordinate structure, we're also getting coverage from the special tax revenues that flow up to the authority. And by virtue of having that coverage, we're able to increase the rating by at least one notch. We actually have gone to the rating agencies. We've received a triple B plus on the transaction, which is what we anticipated by being able to get that coverage. Without that coverage, by pooling, we anticipated getting a triple B. And so we're leveraging the pooling in order to get the better rating, which will get us better yields on the Series A. And then the Series B, we were able to accomplish as much as 100 basis points improvement from a public non-rated sale by getting a commitment by Western Alliance Bank to give us a rate which is basically a spread off the 20-year LIBOR. It's the calculation is 65% of the sum of the 20-year LIBOR plus the spread. And as was alluded to earlier, that's at a rate of approximately 4.02 to 4.05% today, which is actually about 100 basis points through the same transaction, the same size that would be sold in the public markets as a non-rated transaction. So by doing a more complicated structure, we're actually achieving better yields at both the senior and the subordinate side of the coin, so to speak.
Now, on the A piece and the B piece, do the cash flow pass through per passu? I mean, in other words, each A and B get paid identically?
No. So that's where the coverage comes into play. We have the two CFDs. Each has its own rate and method of apportionment, and they levy each unit within those the boundaries of those districts. Those revenues get put on the tax rolls and are collected by the county.
And they're segregated.
They're segregated as two separate CFDs. But the cash flows flow up to the authority. They pay the Series A bondholder first. So all of those revenues are available to the Series A bondholders, and then whatever net revenues are available after paying the A's go to pay the bank, the private placement bank.
Oh, so there's no what about accrued interest? Is the accrued interest get paid to the B piece?
It does, but again, subordinate to the Series A.
Not until the total Series A is retired?
Actually, it's on an annual basis. The cash flows are on an annual basis, and I believe, and we have legal counsel here, but I believe that the way that the cash flows work is we set aside half of the principal that's due for the senior bonds, that's due the second part of the year for the Series A so that it's there and it's segregated before we pay the interest payment on the Bs. And then we come back the second part of the bond year and we pay all the A's before we pay the B's.
What's the term of the APs?
They're both terms go, the final maturity is 2034, I believe, and that's the same.
20.
Yes, 8/15 of 34 is the final maturity.
Okay, so 20-year, they're 20-year
approximately,
yields,
yes,
out there. So, and of course, the A piece or the B piece is subordinate. Any losses in the B piece, but I'm trying to get this straight in my head. But what happens, let's assume there's defaults in the A piece and there are defaults in the B piece, but no matter what, the A piece gets, even though they're segregated, the A piece always gets paid.
Yes, so the way that works, Mr. Chair, is that first of all, the CFD is in the TEETER program. So currently, the CFD is receiving 100 cents on the dollar if there are delinquencies. The delinquency rate right now is very de minimis. I believe it's less than 1% at last check. We did have back in 07, 08, back at the height of the Great Recession, significant delinquencies in these districts. But they still were paid. The bonds were paid. There were no hits on the debt service reserve fund. We don't anticipate that there will be in the future either. And if there were a delinquency, a high delinquency rate, and perchance the revenues that flowed through the authority were not enough to pay the whole debt service, again, it would be the bank that takes the first risk, because all the revenue would go and pay all the principal and interest on the Series A bonds before the B. So the bank would be the first one who would take the hit. And with $40 million in debt, you would have to have very, very significant delinquencies. I think we have 1.5 times coverage on those Series A bonds. So it would have to be a catastrophic event, I think, before the Series A bondholders were.
Well, we know about catastrophic events.
We do. Earthquake, fire.
And they're done that.
Yeah, exactly. What I was confused about in the description here, there's a savings of $490 and $430, and I assume that is respective of for the property owners.
Oh, right.
For the property owners. Mm-hmm. And so I assume that, have you segregated those savings from the two different pieces?
Yes.
Why are they different?
Because again, we look at the
is it fair for somebody who lives in Ladera and happens to be in the B piece to have to pay more than the person that is in the A piece?
The savings aren't directly related to what they're paying. I mean, the rate and method of apportionment is very complex for each individual CFD. The rate at which they're paying their special tax rate is also a function of when those particular bonds were sold in the market originally. So there was a year difference between one district selling the original bonds and the other, and the interest rates are slightly different. So by virtue of the fact that we're selling them all now and we're pooling them together, one has a little bit greater savings than the other.
Just because one's lives in the A portion of the parcel?
No, well, because one lives in CFD 02-1 and one's in 03-1.
Yeah, because you happen to be unlucky. So the guy across the street could save $50 more than the other person. Is that correct?
Well, not technically across the street. The districts are adjacent.
I understand,
Yeah. It's possible, but right now they do anyway because of the complexity of the rate and method of apportionment. If you have a different size home, if you have, a different square footage, you would be paying a different rate anyway. So there isn't necessarily a direct correlation.
Yeah. Well, how do people, what if I live in phase one and I know my neighbor lives in phase two, mm-hmm, and how do I lobby to be in the A piece as opposed to the B piece?
There were disclosures when they bought the home as to what the rate is, and they signed up for it. I think that they would be very pleased to have a significant amount of savings regardless.
Even though my neighbor saves $50 more a year than I do. I mean, is that just a matter of luck? I mean,
it would be a matter of when you bought your home and which district you were in.
Yeah, it's just a matter of luck.
And part of it, too, and, you know, this is more conceptual, but, you know, when you purchase a home that has a Mello-Roos or an assessment district on it, typically you pay a lower price for the home because the market can only drive a certain price for the home, and people look at what they're going to pay monthly between their, you know, taxes and their mortgage. And so there's a lot that the developer and the merchant builders do to refine the cost of the home so that if their product is selling right next to another product,
you're wandering on the question, but the point is there's a discrimination between whether you happen to be lucky to be in the A piece or the B piece. That's what it amounts to. This would be a great story for the Register. Are we missing something on this point, or can you add something to this?
Well, again, it's not the A piece and B piece being segregated. It is the difference is in the districts themselves and the tax and rate of method of apportionment of the taxes,
right,
the way that they were structured initially. So currently, without doing this refunding, we'd still have this disparity in the special taxes between these two districts.
I know, but who's to say which district gets the A piece and which district gets the B piece? Oh,
they're not. Okay, go ahead.
That's a matter of luck.
Mr. Chairman, Andrea Ress with David Tausig and Associates, the county's special tax consultant. Suzanne asked me to add a little more color to this. Each of the two CFDs, CFD 2002-1 and 2003-1, is governed by a rate and method of apportionment, which explains how the taxes are levied. There's categories based on sizes of home. So by virtue of that, people that are in the two CFDs already are paying different rates because of the timing. As Ladera was developed, as you recall, there are six CFDs, starting with 99-1 in the first phase all the way down to 2004-1 in the last phase. Over time, because of the county's 2% policy, because of other factors in the market, the tax rates in each CFD, the actual special taxes that are levied on each unit, vary between the CFDs. Then within each CFD, the rates were originally established based on projections for how big the homes were going to be, how many homes there were going to be, what the size of the bond, what the interest rates are. So today in those CFDs, we're levying at about 80% and about 89% and 90% of the assigned tax. So already there's differences. What the refunding does is then also reflecting the fact that, you know, as one of them maybe was issued at a higher interest rate originally, but it's not because you're in an A piece and a B piece, because you're in 2000.
I understand, but my point is, they got the person who has the same square footage house.
They're already paying a different amount.
I know they are.
Yeah.
But now we're writing a new deal.
Yeah.
So now we're eliminating the old structure and doing a new financing.
Well,
and we're
the structure.
Now, wait a minute. Let me finish my question.
Okay.
So now we got a new structure that has two phases to it, an A and a B piece. And this guy, because he's luckier or maybe bought his house earlier, whatever criteria you used, he gets a better break than the B piece because of an arbitrary.
No, because the A and the B isn't segregated by the two CFDs. Your tax.
Oh, that's what I heard it was.
No.
Oh, did I misunderstand that?
Simply by virtue of whether you're in 02-1 or 03-1. Both are contributing to the A first, and then the leftover revenues contribute to the B. So properties aren't being put in an A and a B. All of the properties in both CFDs contribute first to the A and then second to the B.
But so then why did you say somebody saves $490 a year and some saves $430 a year?
That's their share of the debt service that's
I know, but
allocated.
Why is it different?
Because of the original constraints of the district and how many units there are and what their original debt service, so the difference between their current debt service and their new debt service could be greater. One district has more homes, one district has commercial, so it's not even. Those are average numbers. Individual homeowners, the bigger homeowners are going to, the not the bigger homeowners, the owners with the larger homes
Yeah, I resent that.
I apologize. The owners of larger homes will see greater savings. The owners of smaller homes will see lesser savings. The numbers that Katie presented were average.
So there's not separate collateral in the A piece and the B piece?
No.
It's the same collateral?
Correct.
Okay, all right. Pardon me.
Size does matter.
Let me just ask one more question for, I don't know who could answer this. Tell me how the mechanism works on these savings. Does it get on the tax bill? Is that where it shows up? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, PFAC committee members, yes, the savings occurs in the interest rate of debt service, and that annual per parcel savings will show up as a reduction of the special tax on the taxpayer's tax bill.
Okay. All right.
I have a question.
All right. Mr. Moore, why don't you start?
On the 2003 and 2004, what are the interest rates that are currently being carried by those obligations?
You mean 2002 and 3?
Three, yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I misspoke.
The interest on those obligations, do you have the numbers on you? I don't.
Yes, so for the bonds that we are refunding in the 2003A bonds, which is CFD 2002-1, the current interest rates range from a 4.6% in 14 to a 5.55% in 33. And in the CFD 2003-1, the 04-A bonds, in 2014, the yield is 4.5%, and they go up to a 5.625% in 34.
And that's where we're projecting 100 basis point savings?
So, again, those are the local obligations. So when you look at the Series A piece, which is the public sale, triple B plus, we're expecting savings there, of course. The 100 basis points that I relayed before is the differential on the B piece, the $40 million that's being privately placed, the differential in interest rate as compared to if we were to issue that same transaction in the public markets.
Okay.
There is approximately a 76 basis point differential in the to the favor of the B bonds, which are the subordinate bonds, right, being privately placed, as compared to the Series A public sale. We had originally tried to get as much of the deal as possible into the private placement piece because the rates are so much better than the public markets today. However, the bank had a capacity cap of $40 million. So we're maximizing the Series B to the $40 million and issuing the rest as the public sale.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Hughes?
Gratefully, you already asked my question.
Okay. Ms. Grimes?
Just a couple of quick questions. You had mentioned that the third CFD you were looking at didn't get incorporated into this. What was the reason for that, and why wasn't that able to be worked out?
I believe that's construction proceeds were one issue.
Mr. Chair and PFAC committee members and Auditor Controller Grimes, the answer to that question is that CFD was issued a year later. Interest rates had already come down a bit. It's a larger issue. So all along, we weren't certain if it was going to meet criteria of 3 to 5% savings. And for a while back in August, September, when interest rates increased, it appeared that it was going to be out of the money. It was not going to meet the savings criteria. So we went ahead and proceeded without it. Then we were able to identify a different bank that was interested in doing a private placement also, and then also market conditions changed again, and it became feasible to refund that bond also. We decided to let it stand alone. But we were further along in this one, so that's why you don't see the 2004-1 here today, but we do intend to bring it back to your committee next month.
How big will that be?
I believe it will be a $68 million.
Okay. All right, Mr. Kim?
Just a question about, is there a formal notification process for the homeowners, or do we simply just do the transaction and then they get a notice when their normal tax bills come out and surprise, it's $400 less?
Mr. Kim, we do not currently have a formal notification process, although that would not prevent us from adding a note to the homeowner's tax bill. I think that is possible, so that's something we might want to consider, because that is good news.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a good public service that we're providing, and we get enough black eyes in the county for doing things that are questionable. So when we do things that are good, it seems like we should be notifying them.
I think you ought to put it on the tax bill. Do we have that authority?
I am sure she could just print it right on there. I mean, that wouldn't be a big deal. With an asterisk, and we're saving you this money this year, that would be a that would be worth something.
I mean, if I may suggest, that might be something that if PFAC could make a recommendation to the board, perhaps that
why don't you,
could be communicated to the treasurer.
Why don't you articulate a recommendation right now?
I would recommend that PFAC recommend to the Board of Supervisors that they reach out to the treasurer's office to include notification in the tax bills that identifies the savings that were achieved.
Good. Duly noted. Okay. Any other comments on this one? If not, let's have a motion for approval. Somebody?
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous? Aye. Okay. Okay, do we have any other comments from the public here, or anything that anybody in the room might want to bring up? If not, this meeting's, do you have anything, Ms. Lester? I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm sorry, Chairman Hammond. I just wanted to go back to an issue that was brought up earlier in this meeting about the election of the chair. Mm-hmm. And the bylaws do provide that the chair and vice chair shall serve until the election of their successors at the first meeting in the calendar year. So we'll go ahead and agendize this for January and then have the matter continue to the next PFAC.
All right, that's fine.
Well, somebody's going to move to continue it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Right.
This meeting is adjourned.